I would like to discuss some of the kashrus issues that relate to gelatin. Perhaps more than any other ingredient, there is an aura of confusion surrounding the kashrus status of gelatin. We know that gelatin is one of those controversial ingredients that seem to pop up on the ingredients panels of products with questionable kosher symbols. Often, to confuse matters, gelatin will be specifically referred to on the ingredients panel as kosher gelatin, but the product bears a plain K, and apparently the rabbi certifying the product wishes to remain anonymous. We should be aware that gelatin is derived from animal origins. Specifically, it is made from pig skins or the hides of non-ritually slaughtered cows or from their bones, and one would have assumed that these items are unquestionably non-kosher. Yet, there is a great controversy surrounding the kashrus classification of these items. A formidable list of great rabbis from the previous generations have written responsa on this very topic, for and against, and none other than the great leader of European Jewry, Reb Chaim Oizer Grudzinski, had written that certain types of gelatin, made in certain instances, which we will elaborate on in a minute, are acceptable as kosher. So, let us examine some of the relevant issues and see what makes gelatin kosher or non-kosher. First, let us understand what gelatin is. According to the online encyclopedia Wikipedia, gelatin is a translucent, colorless, brittle, nearly tasteless substance. Note that it is not described as tasteless, but rather nearly tasteless. As we will see, it does have a taste, though it is faint. Gelatin is derived from the collagen inside animal skins and bones. It is commonly used as a gelling agent in food, pharmaceuticals, photography, and cosmetics. Gelatin is an irreversibly hydrolyzed form of collagen. On a commercial scale, gelatin is made from byproducts of the meat and leather industry, mainly pork skins, pork and cattle bones, or split cattle hides. In food products, we encounter gelatin as the backbone of the marshmallow and the gummy bear. It provides the gelling characteristics that allow for an otherwise loose product, such as puddings and yogurts, to feel thick and rich. It gives Jell-O its gel-like characteristic. Gelatin is very versatile and comes up in some of the most unexpected places. For example, because gelatin is also very effective as an adhesive, in fact, gelatin is used in many glues, it is also used to glue sprinkles and the like onto donuts and pastries. There are essentially three processes for extracting collagen from bones and skins. This can either be done with an acid treatment, an alkali treatment, or with enzymes. Typically, when extracting gelatin from pig skins, they are soaked in acids, such as hydrochloric acid, for 10 to 48 hours. The ensuing gelatin that is extracted through this process is referred to as type A gelatin. Cow hides and bones are typically soaked in an alkali solution for several weeks, and the ensuing gelatin that is produced through this process is referred to as type B gelatin. There's also a newer method for extracting gelatin by means of an enzymatic treatment of hides. The various uses of gelatin will either be more suited for type A gelatin or type B gelatin. For example, marshmallows are more typically made from type A gelatin, and in general, type A gelatin will have stronger gelling characteristics. As we will see, this too is significant. Now let us examine the responsa of Reb Chaim Oizer Grudzinski as to why he was lenient regarding gelatin. He was asked about whether gelatin made from the bones of non-slaughtered cows that were soaked in acid can be considered kosher. They were completely dried and then ground into powder. Reb Chaim Oizer explained that the status of completely dried bones is discussed by early rabbinic authorities and is brought in Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea, chapter 87, and is permitted on the basis that it is no longer considered a food item. The Rambam writes explicitly that the bones of non-kosher animals do not have the same status as non-kosher meat. While Reb Chaim Oizer notes that ordinarily there are differences between the kosher status of hard bones, soft bones, and bones that contain marrow, in this situation they are all permitted because any meat residue or marrow that might be concealed inside the bones is denatured by the acids and becomes completely unfit for human consumption, and becomes nullified within the bones themselves. Although he notes that ordinarily one is not permitted to rely on drying out something that is forbidden in order to make it permissible, however, this prohibition only applies to drying out actual organs or meats themselves, and the prohibition does not apply to bones. In regards to the bones themselves, even if one intentionally dries them out, they will become permitted. Finally, he notes that the laws of achshavei do not apply here either. Achshavei literally means to give importance to something. The rule of achshavei says that one may not intentionally eat a non-kosher item, even if it becomes unfit for consumption, simply by virtue of the fact that one ascribes food value to the item by eating it, demonstrates that it is still considered a food by the one who ate it. If an inedible item falls accidentally into a pot of food, it will not make it non-kosher, because there was no intent to eat the item. But one may not intentionally eat the unfit item, or add it as an ingredient to one's food. Although gelatin is intentionally added into hundreds of products, Reb Chaim Oizer argues that the intention of the consumer is not to eat the gelatin per se, but to eat the food item. The gelatin merely adds shape and form to the food. Although the gelatin is not batel, since it is what we call a davar hamaimid, an item that gives form and shape, still the rule of achshavei does not apply. We do not say that the intention of the consumer to eat this product reinstates its non-kosher status, but rather, since gelatin is added in ratios less than 1 part in 60, it adds no perceivable taste to the final product, and therefore there is no achshavei. When gelatin is used in a way that it is less than 1.6% of the total volume of the product, it is considered nullified, batel b'shishim, and cannot impart taste into the food. Although we say that an item that is a davar hamaimid, that which gives form to a product, is ordinarily not batel, such as non-kosher rennet added to milk to form cheese, even one only adds a very tiny amount of rennet, nevertheless, the cheese becomes non-kosher, because we do not view the rennet as being nullified, since one clearly sees its effect. Similarly, gelatin is not nullified, batel, since its effect is clearly visible. Nevertheless, since the gelatin was made completely inedible, and the intention of the one who eats it is only to give it form and not to eat the gelatin, Reb Chaim Oizer argues that we do not say achshavei. This was a quick synopsis of the main points of Reb Chaim Oizer's responsa. Now, if we analyze for a moment the arguments that Reb Chaim Oizer put forth to be lenient, we will see that he is clearly only being lenient with gelatin that is batel b'shishim, nullified to less than 1 part in 60. In jello, marshmallows, gummy bears, and many other candies that include gelatin, the proportion of gelatin in the product is greater than 1 part in 60, and the entire argument of Reb Chaim Oizer falls away. In such cases, even he would agree that the rule of achshavei would apply, that the gelatin is being eaten as a food item, and it is unequivocally forbidden. Although some have argued that gelatin has no taste, and it therefore should be bottled, nullified in less than 60 parts, this is simply not true. The OU conducted a taste test several years ago to find out whether gelatin has taste. Using samples of gelatin from various sources, including pigskin gelatin, cowhide gelatin, cowbone gelatin, and fish gelatin, with varying degrees of bloom strength, samples were given to a panel of 8 persons, consisting of 3 chefs, 3 student chefs, and 2 flavorists. Each sample of gelatin was given diluted as a 2% concentration of gelatin in water. The panel was able to pick out which had a fishy taste, which had a meaty taste, and which tasted like pigskins. Other descriptions that this panel used to describe some of the samples were animalistic, cowhide glue, and protein. Clearly we see that gelatin has a taste, though faint it may be, and halachically is not batel unless it is nullified in 60 parts. And likewise, when not nullified, it does add flavor, and the rules of achshavei would apply. As such, there is clearly no room for leniency in any item in which the proportion of gelatin is not less than 1.6% of the total volume. Next, it must be noted that Reb Chaim Ozer was dealing specifically with gelatin that comes from bones. As far as pig skins are concerned, again, there is no room to be lenient. Pig skins have the halachic status of meat, because they are edible. In fact, a very common non-kosher snack is pork rinds, which are made from pig skins. Since pig skins are equivalent to pig meat, the leniency of Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski does not apply. Even he noted that one is not permitted to dry out non-kosher meat or organs. Only regarding bones was he lenient, because they are not equivalent to meat. Therefore, all pig gelatin is unequivocally non-kosher. As we noted before, type A gelatin is made from pig skins. As such, there is no room to be lenient in regard to type A gelatin. Type A gelatin has a higher bloom strength and is used in items that need a strong degree of gelling. Also, Reb Chaim Ozer was only lenient regarding the bones that had been soaked in acids. Any gelatin made through an enzymatic process would not be included in this leniency, and as such, would most definitely be forbidden. However, the truth is that the custom in America has been established not to rely on the ruling of Reb Chaim Ozer, even in regards to bone gelatin, even when made with acid and nullified in 60 parts. This is because the leading rabbis in America, namely Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Aaron Kotler, Rav Pinchas Teitz, Rabbi Eliezer Silver, as well as many others, ruled that gelatin made from non-kosher sources is non-kosher. Rabbi Kotler, for example, argues that the rule of Achshavei applies even when gelatin is nullified in 60 parts. Since the consumer wants the gelatin in the product, and it contributes to the mouthfeel of the product, this too is enough to say Achshavei, and it is therefore forbidden. He also marshals many sources to show that there are many other reasons to forbid gelatin, and at the very least, certainly one would not want to place themselves into a questionable situation. Therefore, it has become the standard of every major kashrus agency in America to treat gelatin from non-kosher sources, regardless of their origin or the amount that is used, as non-kosher. There are, however, gelatins that are produced today from kosher sources. The two sources for kosher gelatin that are used today are fish gelatin, which can be produced from the skins of kosher fish, and cowhide gelatin made from the hides of ritually slaughtered kosher cows. When this gelatin is used, there is no question that the product is kosher. The only question that remains is whether the product could be labeled kosher pariv, or does it need to be labeled kosher meat? Must one wait 6 hours after eating a marshmallow made with cow bone gelatin? If so, what type of a market would there be for such a marshmallow? And can one make milk chocolate pudding with cowhide gelatin? Or would this be a violation of cooking milk and meat together? This question was presented to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Kotler of Blessed Memories close to 50 years ago. At that time, a kosher chocolate company was interested in making a batch of kosher gelatin from the bones of kosher slaughtered animals for the purpose of producing milk chocolate candies with gelatin. Obviously, if the gelatin has the status of meat, then this may not be done. Rabbi Kotler ruled that if the gelatin is nullified in 60 parts in the candy, then this would be permitted, because we do not say achshavei in regards to meat and milk. Although earlier we brought from Rabbi Kotler that we say achshavei on non-kosher items that are intentionally added, Rabbi Kotler differentiates between the laws of non-kosher items and the laws of not mixing milk and meat. In regards to not mixing milk and meat, we do not say achshavei, and the gelatin remains pariv, and one may make a candy with kosher gelatin and milk. Rabbi Feinstein is even more lenient still. He explains that gelatin made from kosher hides is considered pariv regardless of the proportion of gelatin in the product. Because of the way that gelatin is extracted from the hides, they lose their meat status and are considered to be completely pariv. As one could see, the halacha that is involved in deciding how to deal with gelatin is extremely complex, and there are numerous arguments, proofs, and counterproofs brought from all over the Talmud and Rishonim regarding the status of gelatin. It is interesting to note that even the proponents of the rulings of Reb Chaim Ozer have written that one may not permit gelatin in America, as the minig has already been established there that gelatin is not kosher. So though there are disagreements as to whether gelatin is kosher or not, this all remains in the realm of theoretical, since the bottom line in regards to kashrus in America is that the minig hamakom, the prevailing custom, has already been established that gelatin from non-kosher sources is to be treated as completely non-kosher. Thank you for listening to this edition of OU Kosher Radio.